Good morning and welcome to Making a Change for Good. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
Our assignment from yesterday. Can you see how the voices are framing your choices to ensure that you never win? Example, I'm required to get through my to-do list. This makes me feel pressured since there is too much to do in the time there is to do it. But if I find a way, multitasking, to get it all done, I'm berated for not giving all my attention to a particular task. The choice is between being anxious about not meeting deliverables and being made to feel awful for cutting corners in order to meet my obligations. Assignment. What are the two choices the voices offer you? RL, what you see. Mm-hmm. All right. Here's our first caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Good morning. This is Melissa.
Hello, Melissa. What are your two bad choices?
Well, the two bad choices are to either do it to ego standards, which are not going to be able to be met, but to be very anxious and uptight trying to meet ego standards, or don't do it at all.
Just give up. Either be perfect or quit.
Right. And generally, the belief is it would be better not to do something than to do it poorly.
Oh,
and
gosh.
It's such a setup for not doing anything ever.
Well, oh, right, because what you've already established is, according to ego, you will do it poorly. And if not doing it poorly is the only thing that matters, then, yeah, go to bed.
Yeah, I'm laughing, but it's not funny.
No, yeah, fortunately, we can laugh at tragedy. Right? As long as it's ego tragedy. And of course, thank God we're helping the authentic people that we are out of that mess.
Yes. 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 So, you know, one of the things that I'm finding to be really helpful lately is the not having an opinion. If you're working on not having an opinion, then that's kind of the same as not working on having the standards. And
only ego has opinions.
Right.
Right? Because opinions are stationary, are static. Right? And life is ever moving. So,
Yes, and life also finds a lot more things acceptable than ego does. It has a much broader sense of what's acceptable to be in the world. So one of the things I'm practicing with is we actually have a junkyard in our neighborhood, and so I go look at the junkyard, and ego would, of course, find that to be completely wrong and unacceptable, and life doesn't have a problem with it.
Right, because life is not conditioned to what is worthwhile or good or desirable, and what is junk. And you know, Melissa, the thing that's so fascinating about that is that for ego, there is what is worthwhile and what is junk. And we are part of that conversation, right? It will write us off as junk as quickly as an old refrigerator.
Yeah, that's really where the pain is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it treats us exactly the same way. And treats everybody else, right? It knows exactly who's junk and who's worthwhile.
Right, and it's a slim crowd who makes it into the worthwhile.
Very slim.
It's usually
a slim temporary crowd, right? Because sooner or later, They're going to cross ego. And when they do, junk.
Yeah. Yeah, and it makes for a very small life.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Because most people are not consigned to their bed, although a lot of people are headed in that direction. But an awful lot of people are consigned to the couch, and whether they're allowed to get up and walk around to do enough to earn their beatings or not, their life consists of consigned to the couch. Just obsessed,
yeah.
Right? That's the other thing that's so horrifying about this, is that when a person is trapped like that, where they're trapped is actually not in the bed or the couch, it's inside that head, that very unpleasant place, we could say, a true junkyard.
And it's amazing how quickly the possibilities expand, how quickly the life expands when the standards are loosened. I don't even want to say dropped, just loosened. All of a sudden, there's more.
It's when attention is redirected.
Yeah.
And it's not that the redirection is permanent, you know, for, you know, that kind of takes a while, apparently. But just in the moment of turning attention away from that conditioned idiocy inside ego-controlled head, it's a breath of fresh air. You're here. Life is beautiful. It is expansive. Possibilities abound. And then pulled right back into that miserable dungeon. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank God for junkyards,
thank you.
Huh?
Yeah. Everything has something to teach us.
Everything. When we pay attention, everything enlightens us. Exactly so. Yeah.
Mm.
All right. Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Melissa. Sherida, going back to the beginning of the call, it's always two choices not to do, right? It's never the choice to do, unless it's not going to assist us.
Unless it's a bad choice.
Unless it's a bad choice. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
All right. Here's our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi. This is Kate in New York.
Hey, Kate. Got two bad choices in New York?
We've got a lot of bad choices in New York. Oh, man. Let's see. What I'm seeing is...
You hate to narrow it down to just two.
Yeah, exactly. what I'm seeing is, like, the choices and the voices, it dropped in to look at the energy around them. And that the energy was never, like, a loving, giving energy. So if one choice was, you know, sort of the impatient jerk kind of personality, and the opposite was, I don't know, some sort of people-pleaser personality, like the energy...
Again, never meeting the standards.
Right.
Yeah.
The energy of both those is, like, the people pleaser gets, you know, energy is always going outward and drained, and the disciplinarian, like, there might be some, I don't know, sort of frantic, manic, angry energy there. Does that make sense?
And well, and it's a huge insight, right? Because people will get all tripped up trying to listen to what the voices are saying. So people pleaser, that can take a while to catch on to, that's a negative. Because, well, you're a nice person. I mean, don't you want people to be happy? Well, of course you do. So do whatever the voice in your head tells you you need to do and be in order to please them, which, again, is never going to meet the standard, right? But to realize the energy of both of those feels bad.
Yeah.
That's our big clue. Right?
Yeah.
But it still feels bad. And being here never feels bad.
Yep. And being here always has a kind of, I don't know, it's not reserved energy, but it's like a sufficient, which isn't even the word I'm looking for. Like a,
well, it's equal. It's appropriate.
Equal,
it's,
yeah.
It's yeah. the right amount. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Everything is right about it.
It's buoyant.
Not in a right wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's buoyant, I guess. Yeah, buoyant is a, mm-hmm. that's the word I'm thinking of. Like
ready.
It, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It because life is always equal to life.
Mm-hmm.
It's only when we're identified with ego that we get into too much, too little.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's what I saw in looking at the energy. It was like it was either too much in this sort of manic, angry kind of way, or it was too little in that it was always constantly draining out and tiring.
Yes. Yes, yes, indeed. So we really do have a lot of ways to close in on this, don't we? Which is why the voices work so hard to keep us laser focused on whatever it has us believing is where we need to look, right?
Uh-huh.
So there are people who need to figure it out, and they're just going to be caught in their head, right? There are people who need to feel good about it, which means they're just going to be lost in sensations and emotions and, right? So to look at all of them, including the energy, gives us the best chance to realize, I may not know what centered is or feels like, but I can learn what it's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's like you need all the, I mean, what we're training to do is use all the tools to close in on it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the biggest tool of all in using these tools is what we're using is awareness.
Mm-hmm.
What we're using to direct the attention is awareness. And so we are immediately positioned where we want to be in life, in awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Isn't
it? Yep.
Thank you, Kate.
Sure is.
Good. A lot of good choices in New York.
Yep.
Okay.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
So much. Be well.
Uh-huh.
Thanks, Kate. You know, Sherry, the thing that was dropping in, we say so much about redirecting the attention, but it's always redirecting attention in the context of awareness because we are doing an awareness practice. That they are both in play all the time.
Yes.
Awareness and attention.
Yes. So it's not that ego can't direct the attention. It's doing that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Well, why don't you worry about that? Well, what you need to think about is that. Well, you need to figure out, I mean, that it's directing the attention. But
yeah.
There's no awareness of awareness involved.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Exactly. All right, here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Mark in Arizona.
Well, hello, Mark.
Hi. Wow. Okay.
What are your two bad choices?
Oh, my two bad choices are exquisite. So there is this mythical, not so mythical creature that has been in my life for 25 or I don't know, since I was a child probably. And I gave it a name some years ago. I call it Cigar Man. And Cigar Man is later when I was introduced to you and this practice, Cigar Man is kind of the epitome of conditioning. Except it has a face and clothing and eyes and, you know, it's very detailed. And I've managed in the past, since you, to put him outside the wall. So he's not sitting next to me berating me all the time. And his whole purpose seems to be to make me work. I have to go to work. If I don't work, so I was sick last week, for instance, after 3 or 4 days, Cigar Man shows up and is very, very, very clear that if I don't go to work, I will be impoverished, sick, alone, in the world, barely surviving, walking the roads, you know, sleeping on the side of the road.
Pushing your shopping cart.
Yeah, I don't even get a shopping cart in this scenario.
Oh.
I know. Mm-hmm. Or a dog. Mm-hmm. I don't get anything. Mm-hmm. And so it's work or suffer. And, of course, it's not common because of the way I'm constructed, because of karma, how I'm constructed. I don't have a push towards perfectionism. My father was that way. My dead wife was that way. Other people in my life are that way. But I'm not pushed towards perfectionism. But if I make a mistake and it shows up, that is, either somebody else catches it or I do, Cigar Man is right there. Just, oh my gosh, it's just terrible. And, of course, over the years, I've learned that it's imperative that I admit the mistake and do my best to correct it. And that actually, that has taken a lot of, what do they call it when you're afraid but you do it anyway, courage.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, I'm against Cigar Man. I mean, Cigar Man is a very, very real, palpable being in my experience.
Yeah.
It's not an idea, you know.
Right. If I may, even though with most people, even though they don't have, you know, in psychology, a lot of times that character is called the judge. And and people will have a picture of what a judge looks like because people know judges wear black robes and sit on a bench and that sort of thing. So having a picture of what it is that comes at you, for some people it's their parent or it's you know, that one specific now, not that there aren't a lot of other voices, right?
Because
there are.
Right.
But the thing that is true for all of us in this is that whatever that figure uses is what our karma will go with.
Right.
So for you, it's work. For somebody else, it could be not making a mistake. For somebody else, it would be being pleasing. For somebody else, it would, right? And so whatever a person's karma is will be used against them because that's what they care about. Now, does Cigar Man care whether you work another day in your life or not? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But you care. You care about those stories. And so when he starts in on you, you're going to get up out of your sick bed and you're going to start trying to go to work because that's the only way you know to shut him up.
In fact, that's so strong that I feel better when I'm working and I'm sick.
Of course. Absolutely. And again, I want to underline this for everybody because when a person is doing, when it seems like to whatever degree they're meeting ego standards, when people say, you know, I can never meet the standards, what they've realized is I am allowed to feel as if I'm meeting the standards as I reinforce the karma. But at a certain point, it's going to become clear that, well, actually, I didn't.
Right.
And so then, you know, all the energy is sucked out and I'm drained and depressed or upset or whatever it is that I am. And then I'm encouraged to get back on that karma horse and start trying to meet those standards. And I'm getting information that, well, you're working. That's good. That's good.
Right.
That's good. You're doing good. You're doing good.
Right.
You're doing right up until you're not.
Right.
That's the game. Yeah.
And there's a twist that's happened somehow in my life, probably karma as well, And that is, at one point, when I was quite young, I went to theater school, and in that process, I learned about life. In other words, in order to meet the whatever it was that was going on, I had to get out of my head, and I had to go with what was happening exactly at the moment in front of me. You can't do, like...
Improv.
You can't do improv unless you're really there. I mean, really there. And so, although I was never really good at improv, I got good enough, and eventually I turned my attention to music. And so it's not really a deal. I just have it's a commitment. That's what it is. It's a commitment. I commit to 1 hour a day playing music, because when I'm playing music, most of the time I'm in life. And Cigar Man has no room there.
Here's the thing, though, Mark. In a way, we could take this back to two bad choices. Because essentially what Cigar Man is able to do then is control you such that the only way you are allowed to have any freedom from him is when you play music.
Right.
Which puts him in a position of absolute control. Now, I'm not doing any negative predictions here, okay?
Yeah.
But the way that usually goes, the way it usually goes is that then something stops us from being able to do the thing that gives us some relief, because that's the ultimate control by ego.
So interestingly,
so
and
you know
I
what
think
we
this,
have to yeah. we have to move along here so that so that other people have a chance to speak as well. But that's all right. I just offer you that perspective that to make deals with the devil, it behooves us to realize it's still the devil we're making a deal with.
Fortunately, life is pushing on, man. Thank you
always.
Always.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Bye.
Thanks,
bye.
Mark. Sherry, let's try to get some more callers in. Here we go. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, gosh. Oh, hi. This is Andrea.
Started you into forgetting who you were.
Yes, you did. I wasn't expecting it. I was startled.
So, any bad choices that you're exploring?
Yes, I am. I mean, it's certainly a lot of suffering that these bad choices offer me. It basically seems to come down to the choice of either doing and being identified with urgency and some subpersonalities that I call, one of them is not enough. And then there's also one I call the Nobel Laureate, and then another one. Those are two big ones. And then on the other side of the duality, the other choice is to just procrastinate, not do, be stuck with, and be stuck with the avoider and the addict. And basically the avoider is someone who will do other things so that she doesn't have to do the hard things. And the addict is the one who impulsively grabs the cell phone to, you know, distract herself.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the way you lay it out, we really do limit ourselves when we talk about two, huh?
Yeah.
It's actually a tag team, isn't it?
If
we picture a wrestling match, then it's not two people or four people, it's teams on each side, right? And so whichever way you go, there's an opposite to go with it, because that's how ego's world is constructed.
Yes.
It is the world of opposites.
It is, and so the duality is just, it's awful, because I'm either avoiding and, you know, feeling guiltier and guiltier. It's kind of like a battering cycle, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's avoiding and then being addicted and then vowing to...
Well, and that's a really good point that you make, because in the battering cycle, you know, the definition of that self-hate aspect of it is it feels good and feels bad. And that's the nature of addiction. You know, you have that drink, it feels good, but you feel bad because, God, I mean, I wasn't going to drink. At least I wasn't going to drink right now. You know, I pick up that cell phone and there's that moment of, oh, thank God, the relief. But I wasn't going to do that now. I was going to, yeah. So,
yeah.
It's instantaneous, the feel good, feel bad. And that's the ego addiction.
Exactly. And you know, and then it also will be like 2 hours later, oh, God, I just wasted 2 hours, you know, on doing.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. Only this is the way it really goes. Oh, you just wasted 2 hours. Because, you know, ego, you know, hey, I wasn't making you do that. You know, that was your choice. And, of course, what we're not supposed to notice is, no, actually, I was completely unconscious. I wasn't there at all.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I feel like I'm getting to that point where I'm able, you know, like, you know how you're kind of like totally identified in it and stuck and unconscious, and then there's this part where you're kind of out of it, but you're still being affected by it?
Yes, which is the really important place to be in practice.
And that's where I am.
Yes, isn't that good? Because you can see the identification. You can see what egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is doing. You can't yet extricate yourself completely, but you're watching it. You're aware of it happening. And increasingly, you're going to experience yourself as that awareness that's watching it happen and less as the identification with the ego. So when ego says, well, you know, you just wasted an hour, 2 hours, you're going to have the same response I just had. No, I didn't. I got bamboozled, okay, and I went unconscious, but I can see it now. So 1 point for me, 0 points for you, ego.
What about the situation where, like, is there a situation where you could be conscious enough to say, well, I'm making a bad choice? No.
Oh, that's exactly where you're headed. That's exactly where you're headed.
Hmm.
And everybody who has ever recovered from any addiction, and we all have, but any, you know, the big ones, that not the ego addiction, but the other kinds, you know that. You know where you're getting, you've made a commitment not to do something.
Right.
Or to do something. You watch that getting talked out of it or talked into it and go, that's ego. I'm not doing that, and you redirect attention. That's the heart and soul of awareness practice, right there.
Yes. So even if you're
exciting, isn't it?
It is. And so even if you're conscious enough to say, "Oh gosh, that's ego," yet you still grab the cell phone. You're still
heading in that direction of ego's demise.
So basically, you're still being bamboozled, even though you're conscious enough to see.
Well,
it.
you're still addicted to ego. You're still identified with ego, but not as much as you were. And so it's like, you know, you decide that you're going to run a marathon.
Right.
It's going to take you a while before you can do those 26 miles comfortably.
Right.
But it's all part of running the marathon.
Yeah.
You're training. You're practicing.
Yeah. Well, this is so helpful, because thank you so much, because this is one of the major things I struggle with. So this is really helpful.
Very good. Very good. I'm happy. Thank you.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Andrea. I love that analogy. Sherry, we're always in the process of awakening.
Yes, always. Always.
Of increasing
always.
Awareness.
Yes. Yes, ego can't take that away from us. Mm-hmm. I mean, are there people who aren't? Well, no. Everybody is in the process of awakening. It's just that there are periods of time when we are so far away from realizing that mm-hmm. that it just seems like we're going to be lost forever. But everybody on this call, everybody doing this practice, as well as lots and lots and lots of people around the world, know that they are in a process mm-hmm. of awakening.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing about that is, you know, conditioning basically says in this moment you're still going for the cell phone. But what
you're still stuck.
You're still stuck, but the transformation that is an increasing level of conscious awareness that has been happening while we're practicing is not in conditioning's awareness, right? That's the difference. It's in awareness. It's not in conditioning.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah. That is the exact point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And as we get to the place of being able to say, so ego says, yeah, but you know, you're still being bamboozled, or you still reach for the phone, or you still say, yeah, mm-hmm. and I'm practicing.
Mm-hmm.
And the attention, you're in awareness, and the attention is turned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. That brings us to the end of the show, Sherry, and our assignment for today. What possibilities might be available if you dropped out of ego's either-or framing of the issue? RL, what you see?
Here we go. Thank you, Ashwini.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Go happy.
Go happy.